welcome. This is our third episode. Really, really excited to be out here. Khalil is back. Go ahead.
Hey, Chris is here, and you know what? Brandon is back in the building.
Thank you. Thank you for being here.
He
was out of town stripping.
He was stripping. Exactly.
At Betty's in Nashville. Mm-hmm, y'all check him out.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, all of that.
Yeah.
No, you better die.
But we also have a special guest here. It's a really good friend of mine. His name is Andrew. He'll actually before going in, I'll go ahead and talk about how he listened to our podcast and he read the stuff that we've been writing, and he actually went so far as to take notes. It's incredible. It is incredible. He took notes, and he and I had one of the most crazy conversations about the stuff that I was talking about and the stuff that we had spoken about on the podcast. And so I said, hey, man, I already know that you're a good writer. Let's see about possibly you writing, you know, with me on this blog, and then also occasionally jumping on and speaking at different points. And so we wanted to bring him on here to really talk about his thoughts on what was written and what was also said, because one of the big things with what we are doing is to tell you guys that none of the stuff that we do is dogma. So we are critical of ourselves, and we want you guys to be the same and give us feedback. That's what we ask for it so much. And so he actually had really good feedback, along with many, many, many other people that have been on this. That have been following us or anything like that. Everyone's been really great, really honest.
It's been overwhelming.
Yes,
for real.
Overwhelming. And so thank you guys so much for that. So Andrew is here. Andrew, just give us a quick intro. What's your why? You know.
And thank you for being here, for real, man.
Hi, everybody. I'm Andrew. I've been friends with Khalil since high school, mm-hmm. right?
Yep.
Khalil was paid to beat me up.
That did happen one time.
How much? I can't even remember.
What was the bounty on your ass?
I don't remember, but he was paid to beat me up, and he was supposed to beat me up at this party that we went to that was over by my house. And instead of beating me up that night, we found a spotlight and ended up making sex shadows against my house. And so we've pretty much been friends ever since.
That's the most beautiful shit.
It was a wonderful story, and no alcohol was involved either. It was just a natural coming together of two men and their love that dare not speak its name. So
God damn, that's beautiful.
So that's kind of my background with Khalil.
Oh my God.
But I guess a little bit more about me, where I come from. I've grown up, grew up with a lot of depression. I tend to be self-deprecating in my humor. And that comes from a place of, it was essentially a coping mechanism for a while. And now it's just kind of who I am. Let's poke fun at the silly and angsty things we did in the past. Right.
It's true.
I taught high school for a short while. I'm a manager now in retail, and a lot of the things I see, they all kind of bleed in one to the other.
Mm-hmm.
When you said you were doing a podcast, talked about what it was about, that kind of got me interested, because a lot of it spoke to me, where I come from, and some of the things that I've done as far as kind of reorganizing my brain, how I think about the world, how I think about myself in it, has helped me, and feel like sharing some of those things, some of the analogies, similes, all those different English words that I've used to kind of make sense of things myself, and bring that to the table here.
That's good. That's good. Really, 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 really excited. Last week, again, we talked about heroes. We talked about a lot of things, but again, the big part that, Andrew really talked with me about was heroes. And again, we are critical of ourselves. None of what we talk about is dogma. So if there is something that we feel needs to be challenged that we said, we have zero problems with saying, okay, let's challenge it. Let's look at another view and let's see how else it can be seen. I actually had one of my friends actually say, you know, they said that they liked a lot of what we were saying, but there was this one specific part that they didn't agree with, and I love to be able to hear that. And it's like, that's what we need to start doing more of in society, because all of a sudden it's become a bad thing to disagree with someone.
Yeah, you should be thankful somebody took the
time. Exactly.
And again, we understand trolling is an entity unto itself.
Yes.
But yeah, generally speaking, if somebody took the time to critique your shit,
yes,
then there's some merit to what they had
exactly.
to say.
Exactly. Absolutely.
And me and Kalu came up in the social program at WKU here, and we understand that, you know, reality kind of creates itself. Mm-hmm. Everything's very subjective. So whatever we frame up in here, we're trying to frame it up in a way that it's useful to somebody else, not to just hear ourselves speak. So what was it, Andrew, that you were – what angle was it that you were approaching the hero?
Yeah, go ahead. Just go ahead on it.
Okay. Right. So in English literature, there was a guy named Joseph Campbell. And if you're not familiar with what he did, he's an English literature scholar. And he developed this idea of the monomyth or the hero's journey. And he developed this kind of in, it was around 1949, I believe, where he looked at different stories throughout Western and even some other cultures, different civilizations. And all the way from, you know, like Beowulf, which is one of our first, you know, documented real hero stories, all the way up until his present time. In 1949, so you know a wide variety of things. You know some parallels in what the protagonist did, and what makes one story like Beowulf's relatable to where we're still teaching now, versus you know all these other stories that are lost over time. And he developed this thing called the hero's journey, and what it is it's a 12-step. Call it a process, call it kind of a checklist almost of things that a hero will do in their specific story to complete an arc, essentially. So not to kind of sum it up, they'll start in what's their ordinary world, so that's their place of safety, place of normalcy, a routine, whatever, and they will receive a call to action. So,
and that's where most of us are at, probably, right?
Yeah,
now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Go ahead.
So, that's kind of what I'm drawing on here, and to kind of just again sum it up because it's 12 steps, and we're not going to get into all that. After receiving the call to action, the hero will reject it. So they'll refuse to go, they'll turn it aside, whatever, and that will lead to some form of suffering. From there, they'll meet a mentor, somebody that is going to provide them something, either physical or not, that will allow them to start their journey or push them into starting their journey.
Jesus, that's
and
good.
From there, they'll actually accept the call and cross over from their ordinary world into what Joseph Campbell calls the special world, which is the world outside of what they know. It's something that's completely foreign to them. It's outside their comfort zone. And from there, they'll go into their challenges. They'll meet allies. They will go to some kind of an underworld where they'll suffer a death, of either a literal death or a metaphorical death.
God damn, it sounds like social work, man.
Does it?
Yeah. It sounds like my job. I die and I'm reborn every day.
There you go.
But, and from there, they'll during all these trials, they're growing stronger and they're growing stronger so that eventually they conquer a trial that allows them to gain something new and take it back into their ordinary world, except now they're coming back into their routine. They're coming back into their safe place, a stronger individual with more tools to be successful. And once there, they'll face one final challenge where they're putting it all to the test. They're putting all of their new skills, all of their new abilities. They've achieved their final level. achieved their final form, and they conquer whatever needs to be conquered, and the process kind of starts over from there.
So it's funny when you were talking about the call to action. I think that there are so many calls to action that a lot of us just miss or disregard, or just flat out not want. You know, there would be opportunities for us to be
Or you want to do it on your terms.
Or you want to do it on your terms. And that's the big, I would think that that is one of the biggest parts about being a hero. None of the shit is on your terms. None of the shit is on your terms.
My favorite, though, is I'm waiting for the right time.
Have you heard of the Salumis before? Yes.
Exactly. That was like, totally what exactly like what you said. It's like, you know, X, Y, Z have to, or, you know,
for me,
like, everyone makes fun of me, but, like, I'm a compartment eater, right? Yeah. So I got the steak, the vegetables, and the dessert, and I got to eat my vegetables, and then I got to eat my steak, and then I can't just start, like, eating all the stuff bits at a time, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, for me, my struggle has always been, okay, I can have part of this, but maybe I should start eating off of this other first. Yeah. Tastes better, first of all, but, you know, it might be more important to me in the immediate.
It's funny. Are you the person that goes to the hibachi restaurants and just, like, whenever they, you know, they grill the hibachi food, they give you your, like, rice first and they give you your meat next? Are you the guy that just eats it all, like... You're like, no, rice so here, eat
that,
it.
That rice has got to be done before they get my entree ready, or I'm going to get pissed off. like, this is chow time at the mess hall, man. We gotta get in and get out. Like, we don't have much
time. Flipping shrimp. And stop flipping shit.
And I'm pretty sure some of those shrimp are mine, too. I was getting mad at those guys. Like,
he's giving them to 10-year-olds.
Yeah.
Throwing it to them.
Yeah,
missing.
Yeah.
It's like, hats off to them for being
able
to...
And little baby Eric's over here just like, hell yeah, crustaceous.
They're flipping their spatula. And everything, and, you know, good job, man. You really learned that trait.
I like
please
that
stop egg. Giving my shellfish to other
people. That egg in your head is awfully fly, but it doesn't give you the license to act
for real.
No, it's but like going back, but so, like the call to action. Yeah. There are opportunities that we do miss, that we do say, oh, I'll just handle it later. And I feel like that gets a lot of people, you know. And one of the things that Andrew and I were talking about is in. To bring it to a smaller level for just normal people, being a hero in your relationship, me being a hero in my marriage, right? It's like my calls to action come in the form of seeing a load of laundry, and it's like, okay, I need to do that because I feel like I can be, if you want to call it, a hero there. I feel like it would solve a lot of, you know, little problems that can turn into much bigger ones or something. And I am still working on it. Before, like, my wife listens and is like, listen, that is incorrect. But there are, you know, there are times where it's like, okay, I see something, and it's like, that's a call to action. And a lot of people will just be like, fuck it, I'll take care of it later. But I just, it really does take work to sort of see that part and handle it there. And maybe whenever you know, going through all these different phases, maybe in a good relationship or whatever, you do kind of have this moment where things, just like that literal death, right? Mm-hmm. I feel like in any good, in my opinion, relationship, good friendship, if you want, there is a death there. There's some bad thing that kind of happens in there, and then it kind of, you know, it goes through all those other phases. I feel like that happens for a lot of other people.
Well, and something I was thinking about, like an element of this, at least for me, and not to oversimplify anything, but separating yourself or what you perceive as yourself from your own utility.
Oh, my God, yes.
If you have utility that extends beyond, like, I just want to sit around and pop M&Ms in my mouth all day.
Yeah, peanut M&Ms.
You lightweight have a fucking responsibility to step up and make a few people's lives better.
Yeah.
I mean, let's be honest.
Yeah. So how would you say that we can, what would you say a hero or potential hero, right, needs to do to start looking at those calls to action and actually responding to them?
So for me, and again, this is one of the things that, you know, being literary and of a literary mind a lot of the time, and drawing parallels myself, the reason this spoke to me is when I was at my most depressed, and, you know, I've seriously tried to kill myself 3 times.
Sure. This is real shit. And guys, real quick, we aren't joking when we say on our podcast, you know, on our blog, that we are not going to touch on real shit. Our generation and those coming after, they need to hear this kind of stuff.
Well, and you can like it or not fucking like it, but I mean, we're doing this for us as much as we are not doing anything.
Exactly.
Yeah. And part of the problem for me, too, you know, kind of getting off on a little bit of a tangent, but no, you know, no one ever talks about that. Like, no one, whenever someone's counseling you or like your friends are talking, like, no one ever says, yeah, I've tried to kill myself three times.
There it is.
And it's like, because if you're ever getting counseled and been through counseling, sometimes, you know, that one of the first things that always pops in your head is, you know, what does this person know about me?
Yeah.
And this is a complete stranger. They don't know what I'm going through and stuff like that. Okay. So cards on the table. That's how low I would get.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And so one of the things, though, that helped bring me out through some counseling, but also through some introspection, is that I was locked into a repeating cycle of the first three steps.
Yeah.
So I'm in my ordinary world. I'm comfortable. I think I'm happy in that. Things are going well. I'm getting all of these different calls to action, and maybe I'm interpreting them that way. Maybe I'm not. Maybe they're just like flying over my head, whatever. Regardless, I'm rejecting them over and over and over again because when it boils down to is I wanted to stay in my ordinary world. I wanted to stay where I was comfortable.
And you experienced suffering.
I experienced suffering over and over again. And
why don't people catch on to that?
Well, it's not dope that you experienced that, but what you just touched on is dope.
Yeah.
Again, like he laid it out and then he just straight up like he wrapped it around and told you exactly what it went on in his fucking life.
Yes.
And then I'm like, wait a minute. And then you suffered as a result. He's like, yes.
That's what happens to a lot of people. So how is it that people continue to see that suffering like over and
it's
over?
It's almost like you're cutting future you's throat each time.
Yeah.
Like you're not doing your future self a fucking favor.
Yeah,
like do yourself a favor every once in a while. Yeah.
And you know, I do prescribe to that idea that you know, human nature is to take the path of least resistance.
It is.
Nothing in this. Like even if you say, oh yeah, I'm going to accept every call that comes my way. I'm going to get my mentors together. I'm going to get my squad and I'm going to go after whatever it is I need to go after. You know, even once you get past that initially, you're still going to have trials, and it's still going to be hard, and there's still going to be a lot of opportunity to fail.
It's interesting you say that. So, you know, everyone, when they hit that moment, they say a lot of times they'll watch it, they'll listen to a podcast, they'll go to a website, you know, they'll watch a couple YouTube videos, they'll read a few books, and then they have a plan. They have a plan for this success that's going to fix their life, that's going to do everything. And just like in boxing and MMA and all these other things, everyone has a plan until you get punched in the face.
That's a Mike Tyson quote, by the way.
That's a Mike Tyson quote right there.
Everyone has a plan until they get punched in the face.
You said the face. That's awesome.
Nobody ever thought to bite a dude's ear off until Mike Tyson.
He's a revolutionary.
He's the founder of the ear bite.
It's the sweet science for a reason.
Yeah, it is. It's true. Exactly. But no, that's very true. So how do we make ourselves better once we get punched in the face by life? Because that happens to a lot of people. What else would you say what else do you think that people can do? Again, I really want to drive home that point about seeing those calls to action and understanding what to do once you have that plan and you do get punched in the face. What would you recommend? What would you think about?
Let me just present a question in general.
Sure.
Is it responsible in general for us or anyone else to advocate for individual success, which inherently in and of itself has a selfish component built into it?
If
we talk about individual success with nothing outside of that on the micro level, is it socially responsible to advocate for that without there being a macro element where they are a responsible citizen of fucking planet Earth too?
Now,
what they're doing, they know the ultimate impact of it, or net impact of what they end up doing. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And then we also talk about, and we've probably said it a couple of times by now, at least do no harm.
Yeah,
I don't have a problem with somebody bowing out to a degree.
Yeah,
but again, we talked about your concept of heroism, and I feel like a big component of that as well is your utility, how much utility that you possess. And And I think it's also, like, if I have this overwhelming ability to remedy social issues and mm-hmm. I don't do it, mm-hmm. I feel like I'm being irresponsible.
Sure.
So is it responsible for us to gas people up that we know aren't going to go out there and do good?
Well, okay, let me think about this.
And I'm not talking about, like, trapping and killing people, but like Wolf of Wall Street type shit. If you're the go ahead, be the Wolf of Wall Street, but unless you got an end game that relates to improving the conditions on planet Earth for the long haul, then I'm not really trying to fuck with you.
Well, do you think that that is part of the problem when people are in that phase where they have that conflict? They're trying to, you know, they're trying to fix some kind of problem in their life. Again, trying to be the hero in their story, and they do get gassed up by reading something, you know, by watching YouTube videos, by listening to podcasts, all these things that'll get them motivated. Do you think that the information that they're soaking in is something that focuses just on them and not like how do you make yourself better for the world? Is that
hell yeah, sort of, hell yeah? And I feel like that's a big, like what we talked about last podcast.
Yeah,
that it's part of the formula to keep us each disconnected and keep us as individualistic as fuck.
Yeah,
and I'm not trying to get on here and like spout off some like socialist propaganda.
Yeah,
Don't get me wrong, but I feel like there's a good balance, and we talk about balance for the individual. There's a balance when you talk about society, like selfishness to selflessness. If you're completely selfless, you're gonna go up in fucking flames.
Sure, yeah.
And your utility's gonna probably go to waste much quicker.
Yeah,
you gotta know how to ration yourself out.
So when you were getting, did you? I know you said you would talk to therapists and stuff like that, but how was that process? Were they kind of gassing you up for individual success, or were they saying you know, go and help the world somehow?
Like invest in others.
Yeah, you know. Investing in others.
Well, the thing that was always hammered home to me, because my hardest thing to do for me in my day-to-day was to just appreciate the things that were going good, that were going right.
Mm-hmm.
And once I was able to do that, though, the next thing that they helped me to realize, and that I helped realize myself, and it took, you know, even years after I finished counseling and everything and different jobs.
And how old are you again?
I am 33.
Good.
And a half years old. Oh. the biggest thing that has led to me being a much happier person and a much more, I won't say enlightened, but I learn a whole lot more, and I'm able to apply a whole lot more to my job, to my life, and to keep growing, is to, first of all, recognize them and accept them as they come, but then own your decisions and
take ownership of anything you fucking do.
And then also understand the consequences, because kind of to your point, I've got, for me, I don't prescribe so much to, you know, you owe the world, you know, you have a responsibility to the world necessarily.
Absolutely.
But what you do, I think every person does have a responsibility to do, is to understand that you make decisions every day, and sometimes the decisions are made by just not making a decision, right?
Like, that's interesting.
There's
absolutely. A lot of people that, don't pull the trigger and you let the cards just.
There's a lot of people that feel like they have to do something.
If you bow out, you know,
micromanagement's a big fucking example, making people unhappy as hell.
And if you bow out of a situation that maybe you think is over your head, right, wrong, indifferent, whatever, as long as you're owning those consequences and understanding them, you know, I think that's the biggest thing for me, that I had to start owning my decisions that I was making and the decisions that I was not making.
True.
And understanding that I had a whole lot more control over my life than I thought I did.
Mm-hmm.
Because one thing that you'll hear a lot of in high school students, and, you know, for me, different employees that come with problems, is, you know, well, I can't control this, 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 and this.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, well, you're spending so much time focusing on the things that you can't control that the things that you can, you're still not doing them. You're still not getting things done that need to happen. And, you know, that's one thing that I think really people need to start happening.
Sure.
And just kind of an example, you know, I know one thing we talked about when we were having our conversation and kind of as it relates to this, there's a guy that I heard is His name escapes me now, but he had a really good kind of description of what depression is. Not clinical depression. Sure. Not like depression where they were chemically in your brain there's something that it's more difficult for you to not be depressed. But like a depression that you feel that's not something clinical is a repressed form of rage.
Okay.
So your depression is actually rooted in an anger, and when you trace back the root cause of that anger, for me especially, I found that all of my anger was based on this idea that I wasn't able to control the world around me, and just stuff was happening and I couldn't do it. But if you're honest with yourself,
mm-hmm.
and for me in looking at this stuff, I was able to see that, okay, I had received several calls leading up to this point. And just kind of as an example that I'd written down that's, you know, recent, kind of a bigger picture thing. And, you know, when we talk about this, it can be big picture, small picture,
whatever. Yeah, yeah.
You know, where I was at in my job at the time, I was a manager over an area. I had some people under me. I was comfortable. I knew my job. I was good at it. And I had these different people above me coming to me saying, "Hey, do you want to move up? Do you want to keep rising?" I said, "No, no, I'm not planning on being here. You know, this job it's a way station for me. Even though I'm, you know, kind of middle management now, I'm not gonna move up any higher because I'm trying to get a job elsewhere. I'm trying to, you know,
I've been there.
Yeah." No, this gets better because the reason I'm not going to be here is because I'm seeing somebody.
Oh,
hey. And she
Abundanza.
And she lives somewhere else, and I'm trying to get a job over there. You know, so that's what I'm trying to do. That's my goal.
Love.
Okay. We'll call it that.
We'll call it that.
We'll call it that because we'll be nice to me because I'm a guest. You have to be nice to me because I'm a guest. But that was my call, and I kept rejecting it, and I kept not seeing it for what it was.
Sure.
Long story short, girl breaks up with me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, leaves my poor little heart broken. But where in the past I would try to, you know, step out in front of a bus or something.
Yeah.
Literally, that's the last time I seriously tried to kill myself.
shit, dude.
Damn!
I know. But instead of trying to do that,
oh, God.
I recognized what I needed to do, and that was accept this call that had been repeatedly brought to me.
That does not happen in people's lives often, when a call keeps coming and coming and coming. And I think the call comes in different ways. You know, it'll just because they offer you, honestly, maybe it was different when they said, "Okay, we want you to come, you know, we want you to join the squad." You reject it. They offer you again. You reject it. I feel like maybe it's, I don't know what the term is, but it's like, I feel like there could have been alternate realities from the different times where you could have accepted. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So every time it splinters off.
Yeah, it kind of splinters off. It takes another route.
But, like, and I can only speak from personal experience.
Sure.
And I've talked about previously my concept, and it is very much my concept of telling myself to say yes to things.
Yeah.
Is, you know, my tendency to try and be a perfectionist about shit.
Yeah.
Like, I'd rather not participate than be the baddest motherfucker at it, you know?
Sure.
There's a certain...
I wish I could agree with that.
Well, check this out. Like, there's a certain measure of bragging rights to, like, pulling up to the car show in your McLaren.
Yeah.
And then not racing it because you're just like, no.
Yeah.
I don't want
to
do that.
Yeah.
I'm trying not to be that dude about any of my shit. Yeah. So I try to say yes to things that aren't going to put me at a severe detriment.
You threw up an alley-oop really quick.
Yeah.
That's why I stopped at your weight when we were lifting the other because I stopped at, you know, we were lifting. And I stopped there because I was like, I pulled up to the gym in my McLaren.
No, I hated it. It made me so mad.
And I didn't race
it. I fucking hated it. But you know what? I think you okey-doked me. The day before, we was doing triceps. And I
was doing the
whole stack with a 25 and all the weights on there.
He went nuts.
No, but I think he was okey-doking me now. Kalu's way stronger than he looks. And he's gigantic. Have you seen him?
No, he's a small guy. Don't feed my ego. I got problems.
He's actually 5'2".
5'2".
Yeah, but
75 pounds soaking wet.
Yeah, but it's the clothes he wears.
Huh? Yeah. So one of the things that Chris texted me about this the other night, and I really want you to bring it up. It is, you know, the loose change analogy. So bear with us right here. He's going to explain this.
Bear with us means, like, people like, don't roll your eyes.
But please don't roll your eyes.
Chris is a douchebag. No, but, you know, like, and not to try and make it sound like something mad profound, but if you use cash with any degree of regularity at all, which, you know, I use a fair amount of cash, I mm-hmm. guess. Anybody knows if you, once you break 100, it's easy to start breaking those that change down, those further components down. Mm-hmm. People are apprehensive to break 100 mm-hmm. because it ceases to mean as much. You know, like if you get 83.50 back in change, it's real easy to be like, well, I almost spent $15 on cotton candy.
Yeah. It's funny. I don't see 83.50. Yeah, I know. It's a whole lot. I don't see 83.50 as 80. I see 83.50 as 4 20s and $3 and then 50 cents.
Yeah, and
does that make sense to you?
Yeah, but a $100 bill has some level of respect as capital.
As capital. And I see 4 20s as 4 different times where I'll drop $20 on some shit, and then there's $3 while I'll spend it on one thing.
If a motherfucker wearing the same clothes for like 3 weeks straight can mm-hmm. stroll up on you and haphazardly be like, hey man, let me borrow 20, then it don't really mean as much as far as capital is concerned. Yeah. Let's be honest.
But if all you had is 100, you're just like, no. This means a lot more.
I would be like, the audacity of this man is only in Kentucky to ask for a $20 bill. But I'm just saying, it really, once you break that $100 bill down,
yes,
it's nothing.
Yeah,
it disperses. Yeah. Things start getting a little weaker.
Sure.
And then to break it down even further, one of those 20s, you break at 20, and
it's
then you
worse.
End up and you end up with change, and you break a 5, and you end up with change. And I'm talking about the actual coins, and a lot of us don't even want to meddle with the idea of being like, okay, your bill is $16.35. Of being like, okay, I've got $16, and let me get a quarter and a dime. Or a nickel and 5 pennies. A lot of people don't want to fool with it. So what ends up happening is there is change in a lot of people's houses. I mean, it's a rarity that I've been to.
Pennies don't mean anything anymore.
No, they don't. I used to shoot them. I used to shoot them out of my slingshot.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, just give them hell.
Mm-hmm.
They're not even lucky anymore.
No. But this shit accumulates everywhere. It'll be in a drawer. It'll be on your desk. It'll be in a cup.
Mm-hmm.
It's everywhere.
I think. Go ahead. Something just hit me.
Well, and as this stuff accumulates, I think it dawned on me. And again, this is just something that was like a little bit of an epiphany, I guess, for me. I'm like, that is somewhat representative of the consignment of your time and excess and waste and like collateral damage for you not being fucking as active a participant in your own life as you ought to goddamn be.
Yeah.
Because you're just like, let me just get from point A to point B. And, you know, we talk about path of least resistance, and there is some utility in path of least resistance, but we also are, as a society, we kind of are skating on the edge of complacency, to say the very least. Honest to God, the change itself, to me, just seemed to be a tangible thing that I could look at on a daily basis and be like, yo, that is the culmination of activities that I've done over the course of the day where I haven't been super duper discerning about it. I bought a fucking cold brew Starbucks coffee and did all this. Not only does it make me take inventory of my waste, but it's a tangible representation of how I waste my time as well.
Sure.
So then we're talking about, okay, what can I do to remedy this? It's as simple as a piggy bank, and I'm not really talking about explicitly a piggy bank, but if you just start, you take the one small step to, when you have change, put that in one pre-designated location.
Yeah.
How difficult is that? A kindergartner
can
do that.
It's, It's so hard.
But you know, as far as...
I was taught to use a piggy bank, you know, stick my change in one spot. Go look in my car right now.
Me too.
Yeah.
Like, honestly, the utility of it at this point is if, like, somebody road rages on me, I could just take a handful of change and be like, Ninja Vanish! I'm saying, like... You take all this change and you... All you do, it literally all it takes is be like, oh, I got to do this. Yeah. And it'll take a little bit of your time, but you're honestly buying your time back.
Yeah.
So you'll put this change in the same spot over time. It's an investment of your fucking effort. Mm-hmm. And it's a really painless one.
Yeah.
Okay, take that. And at the end of a year, 2 years, whatever, you have, once you get all that change together, you have something that actually probably represents something closer to capital again.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, take that and then translate that to something you want to do.
Yes.
Your residual, something that you have an affinity for, something that you're good at, whatever you're afraid to do. We're not saying, you know, people talk about cold turkey when you're talking about smoking and things like that. We're not saying jump in, head first, just like, and then if it fails, it means it wasn't meant to be.
Mm-hmm.
Talking about take little steps like we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Do it on your terms. Do it for you.
Because a dollar is 100 pennies.
Yes.
That's the thing. A dollar is 100 pennies. Like, I think of the loose change analogy kind of. For me, it's when I see people sometimes have an idea, or they may have an idea of themselves, and that person is that hundred. That person's that $100 bill. And then there will be certain things that come in that break you into the, you know, five.
Yes! People.
They'll turn you into,
It's other people. Yes, most of the time. It's other human beings have actively tried to take some of your time
away. To $97.38.
Yes.
It's like New Jack City. Sit your $5 ass down before I make change.
It was a dude.
Yeah,
name was Eric.
But that keeps happening to... that keeps happening to people.
Shout out to Eric.
Yeah, shout out to Eric on the slopes. That keeps happening over and over and over to you, to where a lot of us are just piles of loose change, you know, with no real kind of
value. There's a button or two in there.
Yeah, seriously.
A gum wrapper, an old receipt.
Yeah. But I think that's what happens whenever you...
A dreadlock.
Whenever you take a bunch of yours, or you give away a bunch of yourself to other stuff. And I think that what... I think when you have a goal, or when you find something there, the same process that you use to break yourself down piece by piece by piece, you need to apply that same process to build yourself back up.
Hell yes!
And understand that it's not going to be there, and you're not going to just turn into a $100 bill
again. If you don't build a dope-ass foundation, if you build a shoddy foundation and then you decide to do some rad shit upstairs...
Yeah.
It's coming down, man.
Let me tell you the one thing that I always, I'll call it the penny that I always start with, right? If I'm ever broken down, reduced to freaking nothing, right? The one thing, that 1 cent that means the most to me is the fact that I have a pulse, right? The fact that I'm breathing.
Look, we lucky just breathing air.
Yeah, we are lucky.
To El Producto.
Yeah. Like, the fact that I'm breathing, that alone is like, okay, I can eventually turn to this $100 bill. I can become a whole lot more because I'm here. I'm alive, right? And I think a lot of us don't even realize how low of a percentage being born is in the first place.
Right.
You know? But... That's I know some people think, oh, I can, you know, you can sit there and procreate and procreate and procreate, but honestly, being born...
Amen to that!
But honestly, being born is it's a low percentage thing when you count it there.
God damn!
So for me, my one penny, the one thing that, if my life is going to shit, it's like, I'm still breathing, that means I can take care of it. That means there's a way that I can take care of it, you know? And when you know, I wrote something about balance, you know, in the same way, the same second that a problem happens in your life, that a problem occurs, that very same second, a solution also comes there too, right? Mm-hmm. It's just a matter of finding that solution. So Brandon, who is super quick with statistics and just Googling,
Brandon, the silent assassin.
Yeah, the silent assassin just showed. I knew it was low chance, but the chances of you being born are 1 in 400 trillion. Okay, the chances of being born are 1 in 400 trillion. So when people say that someone is a miracle baby or something, or it's like, it's true. You're 1 in 400 trillion. If that in itself is a miracle, so if there's any bit of motivation that we can give you right now, it's fucking act like it. Act like you're 1 in 400 trillion.
Oh, but now let me tell you what happens when you act like it, though.
Oh yeah, okay. Yeah. I like to hear the other point.
People are like, you're a douchebag.
Yep. You know what?
It don't matter how noble your profession. It don't matter how nice you are to people.
Sure.
On a 1-to-1 basis.
Yeah.
If you doing too much, according to them, mm-hmm. they're going to be detractors. And yeah. you have to be a discerning consumer of information.
We said it before, guys. Yeah. We said it before.
So
how do you have that balance of...
Be self-satisfied.
Okay. Okay.
Be self-satisfied. That's sure. why... Look, we show up and we do this because this is kind of fun for us to do.
How does someone understand that they are... 1 in 400 trillion, but not act like they're 1 in 400 trillion.
Oh, because
I said you're a miracle, kind of act like it, right? Maybe it's like, maybe the proper term is live like it. Live like I don't know.
I think it comes down to the foundation thing. I think foundation with regard to damn near anything is fundamental. And if you don't have a basic understanding of a concept, then you're really going to have absolutely no idea. It's like people think the world's flat. Y'all know that, right?
I know. That's so
y'all
crazy.
Are aware that there's cats, like, right now that are, like, sincere as hell. Like,
yeah.
Very prominent ones, too.
Yeah.
That's the thing. Yeah. Is if you're not really exposed...
It's actually a triangle.
It's a dope triangle. What shape is there?
Dope triangle. Illuminati confirmed.
But, you know, I'll say this.
Almost.
Those people that have that belief that the world is flat, the one thing that I can respect is the fact that they believe something. Like, it's hard.
At least on air right now.
On air. But I'll still call you stupid. But I can respect that someone can believe something, because when you believe in something...
You respect moxie, don't you?
I don't know what that is. Explain that.
Oh, moxie, their enthusiasm.
Swagger.
Swagger. Oh, okay. Moxie. Yeah, I've heard that now. Okay.
Isn't Pendulette's child named Moxie Superhero?
I would slap him if that's what it is.
I bet you $5 it is.
It better not be.
I bet it is.
Choose him for my kickball team.
I think that when people do have a belief that they stand by, I can respect that, even though I don't agree. Because when you believe in something, it's like saying 1 + 1 = 7, right?
Well, it's a product.
Yeah.
It's product.
Yeah, that's true. It's true.
It is the culmination of things coming together. When you believe in something, it's the result of what has transpired in your life to facilitate that. Even if I don't agree with you, I might on some level be able to empathize, and then we can figure out some common ground.
Dude, if we're talking, I don't know if this is the podcast for it to talk about, you know, beliefs and empathizing with people, but I have a feeling we're going to touch on it at some point.
Yes,
because it's important. You know, definitely, I believe that our generation needs to hear.
It is
that podcast.
Hey, it is.
Yeah,
look, bro.
It is that podcast.
Like, empathy is intrinsically linked to me to self-reflection.
Yeah. Sure.
At the same time, like, you can see a reflection of yourself in every person you meet if you train yourself to pick up on the nuances of human behavior.
Sure.
You pick up a reflection, like how you're being perceived by different people in accordance. And if you work in a field that provides, like, mental health services, mm-hmm. clinical services, or first responders, mm-hmm. whatever, and you're exposed to, like, a litany of individuals from specific populations, mm-hmm. the patterns start to reveal themselves. Yeah. And you start to realize, you start to get a picture of how you're perceived within this context.
Mm-hmm.
And then that becomes a tool unto itself. Like, how can I use how this relative perception to my benefit? Mm-hmm. And where are my weaknesses when it comes to this mm-hmm. perception of myself?
Yeah. So,
you know, something else, though, too, that when you're talking about empathy and, you know, we're talking about the loose change. And I really like that analogy mm-hmm. and everything. And one thing that I think that's coming to my mind when we're talking about all this stuff is, you know, right now we got the NBA playoffs are going on right now. And J.R. Smith, God bless you, sir.
He messed up bad.
But
look, I don't even watch pro sports, and I know what's going on. Yeah. That means you fucked up, bro.
Yeah, man.
But one thing that I think we all need to respect out of people is, you know, whenever we have an opinion, or maybe there's a change in perspective that, you know, if someone you might have known for a long time, you might all of a sudden have, you know, different viewpoints. Different. That's kind of like the pivot, right?
Mm-hmm.
So in basketball, you catch the ball, you plant your foot. Now you got a pivot point,
mm-hmm.
right? So your perspective, your opinion, your knowledge, and everything, that's like your pivot point. Now, you as an outside party, you got to respect that person's pivot point to a set, because what happens if you don't?
Yeah.
You're going to fly you're in there, putting hands all over the place. You're going to get an elbow in the mouth.
You're going to get an right? elbow in the mouth, yeah.
So you got to respect that. Give them a little bit of space to, you know, pivot, yeah. and then you can mount your defense. And, you know, and at the same time, though, mm-hmm. as that person with that pivot, you've got to understand that, you know, maybe that pivot point is, you know, one of your big aha moments. You're accepting the call to action. What's going to come is going to be a lot of times your pennies. So mm-hmm. you put your foot in the ground.
Keep going.
You put your foot in the ground.
Take me to church, bro.
Gonna pivot.
Brandon, drop a beat.
Please don't.
Keep going. You said I'm too white.
I will become awkward and unable to form a thought. But you've got to accept the fact that, you know, yes, you've planted your foot. Yes, you've made your pivot, but there's still a journey ahead. Like, you know, ahead of you. You don't know what, you know, if you're J.R. Smith, maybe you don't know what the score is. Bless your heart, sir. I feel for you. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I have many friends in Cleveland. They hate you. They want you.
Anyway. Leave it. Here's what I think right there. When you said that pivot point, I think especially it's happening a lot for people in our generation now. People stepping away from their church,
mm-hmm.
people stepping away from their religion,
from their friends, from their job.
People aren't drinking Kool-Aid as much as they used to.
It's not. I don't think that it's a thing of just drinking their Kool-Aid. I think that they are. Kool-Aid they have to take.
Oh, I love
that. There is a thing
the
where
the beaties.
The beaties. Yeah. There's that time where it's like they're figuring life on their own, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that when it's just like that post I had the other day, when you're ready to learn a lesson, life's teachers will appear. When you're ready to experience, the teachers will disappear, right?
It's you, bitch.
but I think that when they pivot and they say they want to experience their life, you know, outside of it, right? They go and do their thing. Those teachers in that part of their lives disappear. And they go and learn whatever it is that they need to learn. They do it as whatever it is that they need to do. And in my opinion, the people that I respect the most in churches are the people that left it. Because you actually, like, I feel like you know what it's like to be away. Those are the people that, like, I really like the most. And I can really listen to when they're like, I've stepped away from it.
I'm the most extreme example of that that you
yeah.
can find. Unless I was Amish. If I was Amish, that would be a little yeah. bit more dope.
Straight probably. Up, I would come back for the bread. Because that stuff is
cool. Oh, yeah. I'd and the honeys.
For the
yeah.
carpentry.
For the carpentry.
The carpentry.
Yeah. I the honey. With my dad.
The carpentry honeys.
You buy that calendar.
Yeah. No, but dead serious. Science. I think that people who have... I think that people who have stepped away from their jobs or stepped away from one field and come back or something, I feel like they could be a lot better because they kind of understand they've experienced this other world, right? They pivoted, the mm-hmm. teachers disappeared, they did their thing, and they made the active choice, especially in things where it's been brought up as when it's been ingrained in you, right? When they make that active choice and are actually living that separate life, mm-hmm. and they go back to it, I have 1,000 times more respect that for those people. Like, hey, 1,000 times more respect.
That brings up the thought to me of people don't leave jobs, people leave managers.
People leave managers, yes.
So, at that pivot point, you can decide, that's when you need to be a discerning consumer of fucking information yes. and be like, yo, is it really the occupation that I'm in? Yeah. Or is it just this person giving me the blues?
Yeah.
And how can, what steps can I make to navigate around this shit?
It's kind of like, it's funny too, like, you know, when you talk about the hero's journey and like, you know, from the first episode, you talk about auditing your circle.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So in the first, you know, after you cross in to your special world, one of the first things you do is you establish a new circle of allies.
Yeah.
And that's one of the first thing, you know, one of the first parts of that. And it, you might even be leaving your mentor behind, mm-hmm. just like you said, you know, your teachers might be gone. Cause you know, as somebody that was in education, you know, I struggle to call myself a teacher cause I don't think I was in it that long. Mm-hmm. I learned pretty quick that it probably wasn't for me,
mm-hmm.
but you know, one thing I do prescribe to
you in sound teachers like a teacher.
And yeah. educators, I'm probably good on a one-on-one, but you yeah. get me in a class of 32 kids and then it gets a little struggly, but
that's anybody.
Yeah.
And look, most teachers cry every day. Like, no! Oh, my God!
It's hard. Like, teaching is probably... It's one of the most grueling professions on the face of the earth.
It shout is. Out to teachers.
But
shout out to my sister.
Shout out to all of them, man.
Sousaphras.
Like, both my parents.
Shout out to everyone in education. Like, if you're a janitor at a school, you've seen some horrific stuff. You're probably wiser and smarter than half the people on this earth.
Yep.
But...
That's what I keep trying to tell people about social workers, but don't nobody believe me.
But one of the things that I do prescribe to about teachers and educators is you don't get into that profession as somebody that's, you know, really into it for the kids and everything. You get into it to see them succeed and move on away from you.
Sure.
You know, you don't want to hold anyone back. You want to make them the best
facilitator
person.
Rather than an enabler or something.
Yes, mm-hmm. you want to facilitate their success. And even in management, too, like, one of the things that I prescribe, too, because I've had a lot of bad managers. Like, you talk about people that left bosses. Mm-hmm. I've left some bosses that... Man, they were not fit to be, you know, human beings. I took away their status as a proper noun, even.
You stopped capitalizing their name.
Yeah, let's call this manager Chair.
Like, why does he never capitalize my name on the milk? Because you're not a proper noun anymore. Anyway, but, you know, I left a lot of managers, but... One of the things, like, you know, when, you know, kind of speaking to your point, Clues, like, mm-hmm. you know, when someone audits their circle, I want to be audited yeah. and I want to be accepted into their new circle after yeah. they pivot with their new information, their yes. new experiences and things. As a boss, it's the same thing. It's like, I want my team to be behind me. I want to be out in front of them facilitating their success. Yeah. And when they look back and audit their circle, you know, if they're moving on, if we've got, you know, I've, you know, had the fortune of being able to promote a lot of people. Mm-hmm. If they're moving on, I want them to audit their circle and say, you know, I would like him back in it, you know, maybe as somebody to go to for information, yeah. Or just someone I want to stick with.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. You know, I'll say this, especially when it comes to auditing your friends and being someone, just like you said, you want to be someone that someone can audit, right?
Mm-hmm.
I wholeheartedly tell people that if you want those friends in your circle, that circle that you're editing, if you want some of those people to stick with you, you cannot be afraid to tell them when they're messing up.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's something that happens in a lot of friendships and a lot of relationships and a lot of families, when a lot of us are just afraid to tell people, like, you are messing up your life.
Or you're not accepting your call.
Yeah, you're not accepting your call. You're, you know, and it's not a... ultimately, they have the say over it. But I think it means something for someone to say, I'm paying attention to you. I see this thing is wrong. No, it's not just us hanging out, getting drinks, doing this. I genuinely care about your well-being,
mm-hmm.
and I think you're fucking up. You know? That's something that a lot of people do not have in their friendships. You know, and that's why I'm thankful to have, you know, some of the people that I do in my life that'll tell me, Clue, you ain't shit. You know what I mean? That'll tell me you're messing up, or you're not as this as you are. Granted, I have my pride that I deal with, and sometimes it does right. sting it, and I'll do this, but I do take that stuff to heart, and I try to get better. I'm not. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I'm good at it, sometimes I'm bad at it, But I think that if you do have friends and you do have those people that's like, I'm worried about you, you know,
yeah.
I think that you are, you might be heading down a different trajectory. Help me understand. If you don't believe that you are, help me understand why, so I don't feel this way.
Yeah. And I've had it, you know, I've been on both sides of it. I've been on both ends of it. I've had people tell me that, you know, you're messing up and you're not really the kind of person I see myself with in the future. It's like, mm-hmm. well, that hurts and that puts things into perspective a little
yeah.
bit more. But then I've also been on the other end of that. I was like, man, I know that you're not doing the things that you need to be doing. I see what you're, I see how that's influencing your interactions with other mm-hmm. people. And mm-hmm. I don't like that. And I definitely don't want to be that person in the mm-hmm. future myself. So, and you know, friends walk away. Some, you know, come to the light.
Yeah.
And I've also been that person that stayed silent when I shouldn't have.
Yeah.
And how does that affect the future too? You know,
yeah.
it all comes back to that idea that, you know, your actions, you have to accept the consequences for them mm-hmm. and the decision that you make, just like you have to accept the consequences and the decision of inaction.
Yeah.
And if you're not willing to audit your circle, maybe to the extent that you should, you know, because I think a lot of people are saying, you know, every day that, you know, this person's pissing me off and, you know, mm-hmm. all this stuff, you know, you'll say that to somebody else, but you won't say it to the person that matters.
You won't say to the person that matters.
Yeah. But, and at the same time too, you know, what we talk about respecting that pivot,
mm-hmm.
you know, you don't want to come at somebody full force and, you know, eat an elbow in the face.
Yeah.
You know, you want to respect their pivot enough to be able to, you know, approach that situation where you might be able to make a positive difference.
Sure.
Or a noticeable difference.
How do we have that? How do you have that balance between telling one of your friends or whoever that they're messing up?
That's $1 million question.
Man. Yeah. How do you properly do that? Because I feel like a lot of people are probably asking that. Like, how do you can't just walk up to someone and say, oh, you're messing up.
I've learned in my experience
sure.
from a clinical standpoint.
Sure.
And I'm
yeah.
not a QMHP, but I've worked closely.
Explain what that a QMHP is.
Qualified mental health professional.
Okay.
Now,
okay.
that doesn't mean that my opinion on this, when I'm talking to y'all right now, isn't any more or less meritorious than
yeah.
even a physician.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not a therapist, anything
yeah.
like that. But I've found in my line of work, it's like jujitsu.
Sure.
Yeah.
It's like jujitsu or judo to
mm-hmm.
a degree. But the objective is more like Aikido. Like, you're like, let me do as little damage as possible, but let me navigate around this shit. Let
mm-hmm.
me see what my best position that I can get into
mm-hmm.
is from this point. But, like,
or like chess, right?
Yeah.
Or, like, for people who aren't like, I don't fight.
But,
why?
Yeah, it's like, he said, why don't you fight?
Why don't you fight? But, yeah, social work, I'm always going to probably come from some semi-jaded little viewpoint
sure.
on stuff. And then also on top of that, I've been in it so long, I'm invested.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like I'm cynical about X, Y, and Z, but I'm a optimist
mm-hmm.
about a lot of shit.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you have to be.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't show up to that, and I won't say job because it's not just a job what
mm-hmm.
I do. People's lives are in my hands.
Yeah.
Their well-being. Like, if I don't make a phone call when I'm supposed to make a phone call,
mm-hmm.
it's going to affect this person's quality of life, whether it be for a few hours
yeah.
or a day
yeah.
or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But that's their time, man.
Yeah.
And honest to God, like, the time that you expend on things,
mm-hmm.
like, to that individual, that's the world.
Mm-hmm.
That's the absolute world. And if you've got, say I've got 10 people on my caseload, every one of those 10 people is chomping at the bit
mm-hmm.
for their spot.
Yeah.
And if I don't do my due diligence on that shit, if I don't put my ass on the line, sacrifice, whatever,
mm-hmm.
then their quality of life is not going to be as high
mm-hmm.
as quickly or for the long term.
Mm-hmm.
Whether they stay out for 6 months, 3 months, a year, 2 years, the totality of the
mm-hmm.
rest of their life, whatever, I'm giving them a shot, but I'm trying to set the pieces up like chess, man.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm trying to set pieces up such that, you know, I'm not just putting people out in the community for the sake of numbers.
Mm-hmm.
I'm putting people strategically, and you know, it's client driven. They mm-hmm. they make their own decisions, and I always tell them that. I'm like, if you make your own decisions, then you're running the show here to a degree. But I'm not going to present somebody with somewhere that I feel like is setting them up for fucking failure, you know?
How do you have that balance? And we'll ask this question just because, you know, we're running on time. But how do you have that balance when you're helping someone to allow them to run the show? Because I wholeheartedly think that you should be running your own show, you know, taking your advice from people here and there. But how do you help someone while keeping them in control? I'm asking a social worker, and I'm asking a former teacher and a manager. How do you all help people do that?
I'll go ahead and say from my role. Yeah. From my role is I set someone up for success. I give them options. You give mm-hmm. somebody room mm-hmm. to make decisions. Personal efficacy goes an enormous expanse when mm-hmm. it comes to people in regard to their job satisfaction. Mm-hmm. If you give somebody a tight leash, mm-hmm. it don't matter what their job performance is. I seriously doubt the majority of the population is going to be excited about yeah. being on a tight leash. If you are pretty much untethered mm-hmm. and you're still capable of performing your job duties, I think that there is an enormous reciprocity there with regard to your own happiness sure. in that position. But when we're talking about social work, like balancing, and I really resist to say, like, I don't want to say wrangle. Mm-hmm. You're not wrangling, because I'm not talking about the individual. I'm talking about circumstances, because a lot of times when you're in social work, you've already got the deck is stacked against who you're dealing with. Yeah. It's not like you have this enormous battery of resources yeah. to draw from, man. Mm-hmm. You gotta finagle some stuff sure. sometimes with these folks. So the best thing I know to do is insulate what I can, mm-hmm. find happy mediums, which include my preference.
Sure.
You know, you're obviously going to put your preference
yeah, in there. Yeah, absolutely.
But provide somebody options. And you're not providing them options to direct them towards mm-hmm. your preference either.
Yeah.
Because that's some sneaky bullshit.
Sure.
And that's manipulative, and mm-hmm. you don't want to be manipulative.
Yeah, yeah.
But, yeah, that's sincerely in my line of work. And I tell you what, like, my sister is a teacher, and she's mm-hmm. been a teacher for a really long time. We've talked about all kinds of existential stuff related to social work and teaching and things like that. You're trying to mitigate as much damage that's being inflicted on mm-hmm. these individuals while at the same time facilitate and set them up for success.
The
you're
hardest
not
job. The hardest,
yes,
yeah.
you, the world. You are a delivery, yeah, teaching and social work, you are a delivery mechanism. Mm-hmm. You are a delivery mechanism for information. So if you're not effective at diffusing information, then you're kind of pissing in the wind.
Mm-hmm. What about you?
One thing, I kept it on my desk, is it was a quote from Bruce Lee. It was part of a longer quote. It says, be like water.
Sure. Flow like water,
It's my favorite quote. Well, and what he talks about in there is, you know, when he says be like water, water takes the form mm-hmm. of whatever contains it.
Yes.
So, you know, we talk about empathy. We talk about, you know, circumstance. We talk about life. If you flow like water, if you're formless like water, then the circumstances and the things that surround you, they don't affect you as much. You mm-hmm. flow with it.
Yep.
It's the same thing same thing with people, though. With each individual, whether it's a student, an associate, a client, you have a new situation, and you have to be formless enough to be able to go into that situation with an open mind, an open heart, and be able to expect, you know, give them the opportunity to surprise you.
Mm-hmm.
And also, at the same time, the other part of the quote is water can flow, but it can also crash.
Mm-hmm.
So understanding when you need to stop being so formless and when you need to start crashing, get that person to understand that I'm being empathetic with you. I'm trying to immerse myself in your situation so that we can make the best decisions for you together,
yeah.
so that we can facilitate your success together. But then also, when you're doing that, say, you know what, I'm immersed in you right now, and you're not doing too well,
I'm going
to smack you upside the head
because
we need to write the course and adjust your pivot, right, to tie everything back together because I like it when things form circles.
I like it when things
form circles. Because the earth isn't flat, people.
This has been an awesome, 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 awesome episode. Really excited about the talk that we've had going on. We are going to do a quick shameless shout out to a couple different people.
Calvin Wiley, look, man, I don't know exactly where you at, what hostel you staying at, whatever, but you come home safe, man. Yes. I know gas prices is high down south.
He is.
So you come back, but also shout out to Rome Sandwich Company.
Yes.
It's delicious. Also, it is nutritious.
Yes.
Go in and see Tessa or Tanner. If Tanner's there, give him slightly less money than you would Tessa.
Give Tessa way more money than Tanner.
Just throw your wallet in Tessa and then shake dance.
Yes. I want to give a shout out. You know, I was talking to one of my friends at an event. I'm all about supporting, you know, a lot of the small businesses here, but Sublime,
Buddy,
Austin Albany.
Austin.
Thank you so much for the talk. It was really, really good getting the, getting into the conversation.
And you know what? Like, I was just thinking, I was taking care of my hygiene requirements. I was like, I wish I had a Silk & Suds bath bomb, but I didn't because I'm irresponsible. And I'm not as much of a go-getter as I need to be. So shout out to Silk & Suds.
Go ahead
and feel and smell fantastic.
Yes. Again, I didn't finish the full name of the company, Sublime Media Group. Seriously, Austin, I appreciate the conversation that you and I had on Friday. I'm going to take the knowledge that you gave me and really apply it to this. And, you know, I'm excited for the direction that we're going. Thank you, thank you, thank you so much. But a huge shout out again to Sublime Media Group.
Also, I want to just apologize on behalf of Brandon for him talking so much through the totality
Brandon just
of this
can't
recording.
Stop talking.
And then on top of that, I want to thank Andrew for showing up.
Yes, Andrew, thank you so much.
Yeah,
appreciate
man,
it
was dope.
Appreciate it. There will be more, hopefully more content. You know, Andrew's going to be working with me. He is a incredible writer.
Yeah, and then I might be running the Twitter thing if I can act right for a little bit. So we'll see. I'm going to take a deep breath and see if I can come up with some silly but appropriate things for Twitter.
Yes, guys, this is a work in progress. We, like I said last episode, we are going to continue to iterate and grow. Please give us more feedback. We need that to be able to make ourselves better and give you guys a solid product that you need. So thank you all so much, and we are looking forward to another episode, another good week. Everyone stay positive, kick ass at work, you know, in school, whatever you're doing. Just go out there and crush your shit.
Unless you're a fascist.
Unless you're a fascist. You guys, we are not down with that. So
y'all be cool.
Be cool.